this week, we're talking about the C word, climate. Because as much as we enjoy talking about politics and the news of the day, climate change continues to be the most pressing issue of our time. Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SER. Find us wherever you get your podcasts, as well as on Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed. Ed, first let's talk about this at a federal level. Climate change is the most pressing issue of our time. Why do Donald Trump, Republicans, other right-wing leaders around the world refuse to take it seriously?
Well, that's pretty easy. Current jobs are fragile in this economy. Robots, new technologies are removing jobs. If you add climate change on top of this, and you want to stop job building by taking out coal, you want to stop it by stop making steel, you want to clean the air and the groundwater. All those air and groundwater issues were job issues. People worked in those plants that produced that bad stuff. And those people still want jobs. They are voters, and they're coming out. Now, the Europeans have taken a very different strategy. They viewed climate change as an economic opportunity. So they are changing not just their fuel supply, but the way they do business. This is hurting them, too. We have unemployment rates in Spain of 20%, Italy of 17%, 18%. But everything's getting better because they're developing new products, new goods, new services, and it's beginning to take hold. So people are being a little bit patient, but not too patient. So climate change is not, it's the political climate that has to change before anything else. The last thing on this issue, the people who are Greens and the like are against everything. They have not come up with an agenda of this is what we're for in the United States. The only people who have, believe it or not, are the UAW, the auto workers, who want to make more efficient automobiles and the like, and they're blaming their management for not seizing that opportunity. So I think the American labor force is less likely in the near future to cry climate change is a bad thing because the unions and the union movement, not the Greens, are saying we need to move on to have new jobs and not the old ones.
I'm going to touch on that agenda again in just a moment, but as we've spoken about, Trump is actively getting harder on climate science, bearing reports, ordering the National Security Council to strip references to climate change in speeches, and trying to force the National Climate Assessment to conform to the administration's political position rather than assess on science. The party may be able to order us humans to ignore the evidence of our eyes and ears, but it's not going to have an impact on the changing climate itself.
No, but it's not going to happen any change in evidence. Those bureaucrats have not changed the reports. They have not scuttled the reports. They've come out even when the president said they shouldn't come out. He can't fire them. They are permanent civil servants. So while he might want to ignore climate change and the like, the civil servants aren't. And there's a rear guard action, and it goes all the way up to the White House. The thing I said just a moment ago, people recognize the United States has to stop fighting things against things and start fighting for things. And then the whole trade issue, job creation in the newest areas of economies like AI and so forth are the important agenda. So climate change is an AI agenda. As you come up with artificial intelligence, you create new kinds of jobs and you're able to deal with the climate issues. But climate change as we know it, I think we're past the no-go. We can't say we're going to lower the temperatures. We can't say we're going to improve the oceans. What we have to say is, how do we adapt to the new climate that's coming?
Yeah, when we talk agenda, I think that is the one that is hanging over our heads the most, just shutting the stall door after the horse has already bolted. climate change is here. It's not a change we can make to say things is going to remain business as normal. These changes are upon us and we need to deal with them.
Absolutely. And if we don't deal with them, and I'm talking about in the positive way, for example, in the Alps now, they used to take the cows in the summer months to feed on top of the mountain. They keep going up, up, up. Now there's not enough oxygen for the cows. So you have to do very much like the Dutch have done. You adapt to your circumstances. You come up with new ways of feeding your animals. You use new practices and processes, what the Dutch have done very successfully, and other nations are doing too. So even the Chinese are adapting to climate change in this way in order to start feeding themselves. They have a big problem. They don't have enough arable land. So they have to start using greenhouses and the like. So I really think climate adaptation is where we have to go. The change has already occurred.
Well, let's talk some of the impacts. Firstly, the National Security Council, as I mentioned before, the UN Security Council has called climate change a threat multiplier that could destabilize world order. How would you see that happening, Ed?
Well, the first thing is the wars that we see starting now are water wars. All the wars in the Middle East are about water. Yemen is about water. All the wars across North Africa are about water. The new conflict between India and Pakistan is about water. So these combats are going to continue. But what we have to worry about in Australia is water rising, not water going away. The islanders have warned us, the Solomon Islanders and all those, you have to stop this water rising by the way you have your shipping and your shipping channels, the whole Adani mine and all this for New Guinea and so forth is not about new wealth for Australia, but about new water coming to their islands and their shorelines. If we don't do this, there's 70 million people within the next two decades that'll have to leave their homelands. We have no capacity to stop them from coming to Australia and New Zealand. So I think this is a climate issue. Again, it's already happening. The Chinese are benefiting from there with this infrastructure projects they have. We're trying to play catch up, but we're not playing catch up in the right way. We have to do something to solidify the countries and not simply build new armaments and ports for them or roads. We have to do something that helps them stay in business. And there are some islands that are going out of business within the next 5 years.
Just touching on that one, of course, the closest to home issue in the United States would be the migration levels at the US-Mexico border. And we've seen right now that just locking people up is not working. Simply blocking the border is not working. So when we look at the situation in the States with people moving there, we'll talk about the situation for Australia and New Zealand in terms of these masses of people moving because, as you say, they're dying where they're coming from. What about helping developing nations with their survival? What about going there rather than staying here?
Wouldn't that make sense as an American economic agenda? We helped Europe recover. Why don't we help Central America recover? Wouldn't the best foreign aid be working with the Central Americans on dealing with climate change? Because the climate's affecting them is affecting the United States. So I see this kind of short-sighted agenda stopping people is never working. The only thing you do is lower your moral standards without doing anything about the problem. We don't have enough jail space in the United States to jail everyone who's a refugee from climate change, nor in Australia. So what we need to do is help them deal with the problem, get on their side rather than trying to destroy them for seeking some form of human existence away from the disasters where they are.
And you've touched on this, but economic impacts of climate change. Scientists have estimated that if temperatures rise 2 degrees, That's 2 degrees Celsius. Global GDP will fall 15%. 3 degrees, GDP would fall 25%. So this is presumably a roll-on from not dealing, not adjusting economy, not actually taking advantage of opportunities.
What if we did it, looked at the opposite way? The GDP could go up 4% if you started attacking some of these problems. The GDP might go up 8 or 10% if you did it very intelligently. And I'm not saying every climate change approach is the same. I'm not saying wind farms to develop energy are the same as solar, are the same as better technology, are the same as nuclear and the like. But we do know a lot more now about climate change itself, and we know what interventions work. Can we stabilize the Himalayas? They're losing almost 8 meters a year of snow mass. Well, we may not be able to, but instead of having floods in Bangladesh, maybe we can get some of that good water, get it all the way to Yemen, and we can stop the water wars. We've got to think very proactively about these things and not narrowly. Clearly, we know in Australia and the United States about building dams and moving water to where you need it. Start doing that. That would be the best foreign policy, the best economic policy, and the best climate change policy.
Regarding some of the threats and the good news and bad news on those threats, agricultural, climate change poses both an economic and a survival threat here. How is the United States prepared to deal with climate change threats to agriculture on a federal and state level?
Well, interestingly enough, almost two decades ago, the United States started embarking on this kind of science, climate change science, and things have changed. For example, the amount of water used in the United States to produce crops has dramatically. Certain crops aren't even being grown anymore. Certain technologies and techniques are taking place now that could be used elsewhere in the world to improve crop performance. But on the other hand, you can now grow crops in Alaska that you couldn't before, in Northern California. So new things are opening in the United States and Canada because they're so vast. Here again, let's connect that with Central America. What if some of those immigrants and the like could work in these new agricultural fields like they worked back at home and ease these tensions with long-term visas and the like? I think where there's a will, there's a way. We know a lot of science now. Climate change, the obverse of climate change science, is now pretty good. The United States is actually in a very good position. Exporting wine from Alaska sounds crazy, but it's beginning to happen. So I think there are real opportunities here, and we've got to seize them. They may not do it all. Let's be realistic about that. But if we don't start in this direction, we can never get there.
And on infrastructure, we discussed this only a few weeks ago, and as you said, it's very pressing here in Australia. Coastlines could flood. Extreme weather events can wipe out roads, train tracks, even cities, as you well know, having seen the devastation of Hurricane Katrina. Where are we in terms of developing infrastructure that can withstand climate change?
Well, we actually, again, from the Dutch and some experiments that have gone on in the United States, England, and elsewhere, we know a lot about developing this infrastructure. That's why the infrastructure bill, which Trump would not meet with Pelosi on, is so darn important. Mm. It's not just a bill about building some roads or making the water systems cleaner and safer. It's about building a new infrastructure recognizing climate change. And again, here, the science, particularly with the Dutch, and I mentioned them two or three times, is darn good about what you do and how you do it. This is being applied since Sandy in some of the northeastern cities to remarkable effect and is making these places far more productive than they were before. Now we need to do the same thing in the Midwest and try to figure out how we deal with other dangers related to climate change like fire in California.
Mm.
And that's another big one where climate change because the animal life and so forth is leaving the forest, would keep down underbrush, and that's a climate change issue, fires are proliferating. Do you move the people, or do you come up with new science to figure out how to deal with the problem?
And similar to infrastructure, power production and the cost of delivering power utilities. Trump wanted to single-handedly save the coal industry, although interesting, in April of this year, capacity in the US for creating electricity from renewables surpassed coal for the first time. That sounds like good news, but again, the good seems to be being unnecessarily hobbled.
Well, again, this is kind of a yes and no, and I hate to say that. One of the reasons that the U.S. is going down with coal is another natural resource, and that's gas. Natural gas is being pumped out of Oklahoma, California, Nevada, and Texas big time. So natural gas is replacing coal, and that is environmentally a bit better, but it's not the same as renewables. Renewables are coming up, but the thing that we have to do there is battery storage. Again, here are new job opportunities, new placement and new infrastructure opportunities. I've seen batteries that actually generate good stuff rather than bad stuff using a combination of iron and water. So it's possible to use new forms of energy to generate better environments and not kill the existing environment. So in the industrial era, the advances in technology made better jobs for everybody. In the climate change era, the advances in technology will have to make jobs and better jobs for everyone.
And again, politically, but this time in world politics, Trump pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Agreement. We had the same thing happen here, done by a former leader who now thinks we should be back in it. We mentioned, of course, Samoa and the likes of Papua New Guinea looking at Australia and going, why are you putting in a new coal mine? You have people looking towards Trump saying, why did you pull out of the Paris Agreement? Why are you doing these things? What about ramifications from not being seen to be involved in the solution? And how is that actually being solved?
Well, let's start from the top here. The U.S. is not a moral leader anymore. The U.S.'s leadership in the world is diminishing. And I don't care who the next president is. The U.S. role is now diminished and hobbled, much like climate change, to the extent that it can't be recovered. So what do you do next? What you do is find new friends. And clearly the British have hobbled their own chances in the world, and maybe the British and the United States can do something. But I want to go back to another treaty that we've all forgotten about then, and that's the Trans-Pacific Treaty, that might find new ways to deal with trade and climate change by changing shipping lanes, by making vast improvements in these things that would be better for the world. So the United States, believe it or not, Trump is now talking about TPP because he wants to deal with the trade issues, but all the partners want to deal with the climate change issues. Maybe Trump would have a victory here. And certainly, if he does something good, I'm much for it.
And just finally, Ed, any other good news we should keep in mind?
Well, I do think we have to keep in mind the whole issue of changing water supplies and water, where water is going to come from. Water is going to be the new science. It's going to be a science much like computer science. I think more young people will be going into water science very soon because the future of the world depends on it.
Ed and I will be back to your regularly scheduled programming next week. Subscribe and find us on Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed. US of Ed is produced in the studios of 2SER in Sydney. Help support the work we do by going to 2SER.com/support.